org. I'm Vicki Wolf with CLEAN, Citizens League for Environmental Action Now, and that's Earth Care for today and a better tomorrow.
Happy holidays from KPFT Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned at 4 o'clock for Free Speech Radio News, followed by KPFT Local News. And now, here's Leo Gold with the new Capital Show.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the new Capital Show. I was going to say good morning. I just woke up. Huh? Good afternoon. Welcome to the new Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. It's great to be with you here on Thursday afternoon, December the 3rd, coming to you from the station 90.1 FM, Houston, KPFT, part of the Pacifica Radio Network. We'll be with you for the next hour and be taking your calls. We haven't taken calls in a bit between all the guests we've had and the fun drive that we had back over a month ago. I was out last week. Thanks to my friend Stuart Dow for sitting in last week. First time he ever did radio. I think he did great. 713-526-5738 is the number. 713-526-KPFT. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I was in Portland, Oregon, where my wife's family is from, a wonderful part of our country, beautiful, natural part of our country. We went to Mount Hood, one of the massive mountains in the Cascades that sits to the east of Portland, and my little boy experienced snow for the first time. Apparently, he's going to experience snow for the second time soon after that, because it may snow in Houston tomorrow. So he'll be ready. He's got his hat and mittens, and he is going to know what to do. He took to the snow in Oregon like a duck to water, and so he's going to be ready if it snows. We're going to get, later on in the show, Tony's going to give us an update on what's going on. So I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I always have mixed feelings about Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving really was the high point in history of relations between Europeans and Native Americans. It really went downhill after that. The height of relations between the two peoples was around Thanksgiving, the first Thanksgiving, in the early 1600s. And very soon after, the Europeans began to encroach in Massachusetts on the land of Native Americans. It happened almost immediately after that. They got helped out. They were starving. The Native Americans under Massasoit, I think it was the tribal leader in Massachusetts, came to the aid and the rescue of the European pilgrims, the English pilgrims. But very soon after that, relations became very frosty, as designs were made on the lands of Native Americans. So I always think about that during Thanksgiving and try to think not only about what I have to give thanks for, but try to make some reference as well to history. And I think it's important that we approach so many things in that way, from a position of hopefulness, but also from a position of realism. You have to have both. You can't have one without the other. You can't have realism without hope, because, you know, the reality can become too much to take. And you can't have hope without reason, because then you have nothing with which to accomplish your hopes. You have no way to implement hope. Reason with hope and hope with reason, I think, are the key to moving forward into a positive future. And I think so many people right now are groping for that right balance between reason and hope. We hope we'll get out of Afghanistan. How do we reason our way to do that so that our hopes match our reasons? We hope the economy will improve. How do we implement ration and reason so that that can happen? It's not simple. If we have reason and pessimism, we have something that's not very workable. So hope, which is an expression of optimism, is critical, but so is reason. I've been reading a book called Too Big to Fail. This is written by Andrew Ross Sorkin, who is one of the top business writers at the New York Times. Big book. I mean, I don't know how many pages it is. The reason I don't is because I've been reading it on my iPhone. Unbelievable that you can do that, but you can do that. So I'm reading on the iPhone. There's no page numbers. Ugh, shut this off here. So there's no page numbers, but it's this big book, and he's really done a service for all of us, which is he has given us the play-by-play, the blow-by-blow account of the bailout last year. Who said what to whom? I can tell you that apparently bankers use the F word an awful lot, because it's throughout the book. It's just one of those words that bankers use. But Sorkin has done a big service to the rest of us. If you're interested in reading who said what to whom and how did they say it, it's all there in Too Big to Fail. And by all accounts, he really does have the story as to what happened in Too Big to Fail. I haven't yet finished the book. I've got just a little bit left, but I've got the point. And it really is a fascinating, fascinating read. And a sad one, too, a bit of a sad one, too, that in many ways we are in a position where we have turned over so much of our economic effectiveness, so much of our economic implementation and policy to bankers. Bankers are intermediaries. They are there to help move capital from savers to projects, from pools of capital to projects. And I think that one of the things that the book certainly inspires in me is the question, are these people who have come into these positions of being the official, large, sanctioned intermediaries, financial intermediaries, those who are entrusted with making the decisions of how capital will be allocated, monetary capital, are they the right people for the job? A lot of people have this question right now. Are they the right people to be making the decision that here is a pool of capital and here's a project and I am the entity that stands between those two other entities? Are they the right people to be making those decisions, either through their upbringing, through the way they've become educated, or just from their work experience? I'm not prepared to say they're not, but I think that it's a very valid question, and it's the big question that I come out of a book, Too Big to Fail, asking. Are they the right people? Do we have the right processes? And this is a lot of what's going on right now, I think, and a lot of what's on people's minds. I was asking Tony and Kirsten before the show, what do you think's on people's minds these days? I'm not sure what's on my own mind. I'm really not. I was driving in from out of town this morning with a friend of mine, and I said, yeah, I'm not sure what's on my mind, really. It's a strange position to be in, because so often I come in, I do the show, I know what's on my mind. And I think a lot of people right now are not quite clear what's on my mind. Maybe there's too much on my mind. Is it personal issues that are on my mind, or is it economic issues? Lots of people are facing very personal and very difficult issues. Here's something from the New York Times. Food stamp use soars, and the stigma of it fades. Well, you can imagine that a person who is requiring food assistance, what's on their mind? From Martinsville, Ohio, the report is that with food stamp use at record highs and climbing every month, this article estimates 20,000 new Americans, I think it's every day. I think that's what the article says. Every day. Yeah. The program is expanding at a pace of 20,000 people a day. That's huge. With food stamp use at record highs and climbing every month, a program once scorned as a failed welfare scheme now helps feed 1 in 8 Americans and 1 in 4 children. 1 in 8 Americans and 1 in 4 children are fed by the program, food stamps program. It has grown so rapidly in places so diverse that it is becoming nearly as ordinary as the groceries it buys. More than 36 million people use inconspicuous plastic cards for staples like bread, milk, and cheese, swiping them at counters in blighted cities and in suburbs, pocked with foreclosure signs. Virtually all have incomes near or below the federal poverty line. But their eclectic ranks testify to the range of people struggling with basic needs. They include single mothers and married couples, the newly jobless and the chronically poor, longtime recipients of welfare checks, and workers whose reduced hours or slender wages have pantries bare. While the numbers have soared during the recession, the path was cleared in better times when the Bush administration led a campaign to erase the program's stigma, calling food stamps nutritional aid instead of welfare, and made it easier to apply. And as I said, 20,000 people a day. So what's on my mind? What's on my mind is really something that's always on my mind, which is, are we going to perfect our nation, our communities? Are we going to perfect, you know, I think the question, I think it was Lincoln or who was it that talked about a more perfect union? Was it Lincoln? Tony says it's Lincoln. This is a hope. This is a hope. This is a hope that we have to perfect our union. How do we do it? By what means do we do it? How do we reason our way to doing it at the same time that we hope that we do it? So that food stamps, rather than growing at 20,000 people a day, rather than growing it that much, declines at 20,000 people a day. And so many people have the concern these days, how will we perfect our communities? As I've said, it starts where you are. We have to start where we are. If we look at the target that we're going to, way off in the future, we can get depressed because it seems so far away. 20,000 people being added to the roll of food stamps every day. seems like we're going in the wrong direction, and yet I've got to believe that we are continuing to make progress. Here is another piece of information. At the same time that we hear about food stamps increasing by 20,000 people a day, we get other news. Big utility to close 11 plants using coal. A large southern utility said Tuesday that it would close 30% of its North Carolina coal-fired power plants by 2017. A step that represents a bet that natural gas prices will stay acceptably low because this company is going to transition over from coal over to natural gas. And the bet as well that stricter rules are coming on sulfur dioxide emissions which cause acid rain, which of course come from coal-fired power plants. The utility Progress Energy is based in Raleigh. It said it would close 11 coal-fired power plants built between the 1950s and 1970s. That's a pretty good number of plants, 11. All of them built between the 50s and 70s. Some of these plants are quite old, said Bill Johnson, the CEO, but he added they have a lot of useful life left in them, absent the need to put emission control units on them. Well, yeah, no kidding. They've got a lot of life left in them if you don't have to put emission controls on them. And this is what I've been saying for years, right? Looks great if you don't have to put emission controls on them. There's no cost to them if you don't have to put emission controls on them. Well, not putting emission controls on them does not jibe with our notions of what the future ought to look like in this country. We want a future where a coal-fired power plant will have the proper emission controls put on it. Right? That just makes sense. In our sewage plants, the way we want the future to look is a future where sewage is contained and dealt with and not put into rivers and streams and into waterways. The future we want, let's just take here in Houston, a future we would like is one where Galveston Bay is totally and completely restored and taken care of, where our forests are restored in the area. And we had beautiful, beautiful forests in this part of the world, where we replant trees and we change the way our transportation works in our urban centers. This is the way we want the future to look. And so, yes, we look at the future because that's where we have to go. But how we get there is the same way you climb a mountain, one foot after the next. We have a lot of people really, really tired of climbing the mountain right now. That's what I think. And so it is up to the rest of us who have energy. Right? If you've ever climbed a mountain or taken a hike in groups of people, you know that not everybody has the same energy at the same time. Sometimes you've got it. Sometimes somebody else has got it. Sometimes you ate the energy bar. Sometimes they got the energy bar. Whatever the case is, it doesn't happen that everybody at the same time has the same energy. And there are a lot of people who are tired right now. And it's up to the rest of us to pick them up on the trail. So that's where my mind is at, and that's what's on my mind, which is how can I, as someone who is employed, I'm self-employed, but I'm employed, I'm lucky to have a job, to have clients, to have a house, to have this wonderful avocation that I get to do on every Thursday. How do I use that situation to pick other people up who are struggling? It's monetary. Yes, it is that. It's paying my taxes without complaint. It's not evading taxes. We've got too many people who evade taxes. Big taxpayers, small taxpayers alike, you name it. We've got too many people who evade taxes. Taxes are a way that we say We're part of the club, paying our dues. So that's another way that we pick people up. We pay our taxes. We don't evade them. If we want to change the tax code, we become politically involved. We tell our politicians and we tell our representatives, we don't agree with this use of capital. We don't agree with this project. We want to see it go to a different project. And I truly believe that we are beginning, truly at the beginning, of a sea change in the projects that we take on. President Obama made a speech the other night, and a lot of people are talking about the speech on Afghanistan. One of the things people are saying is it was a hard speech to characterize. Some people said it was hopeful but negative. Right? Imagine that. It was hopeful but negative. Right? It was upbeat but downbeat. To me, the speech represents really the closing phases of what has been an abject failure of American projects over the last decades. The foreign intervention of America the intervention of America in foreign countries with military force, which in my lifetime has been an abject failure. I understand people will disagree with that characterization, but I think we have spent an enormous amount of capital for a project that has not yielded much in the way of returns. And properly, people are now focused on the expenditure of American capital. Now that we are so over-indebted to the Chinese, to the Japanese, to other countries that have saved and lived within their means, as it were, while we have not. One of the big questions, how do we finance ourselves going forward? Do we take on additional debt? Or do we save? Americans have already begun to save in this recession. That is one of the good news items. Yes, the culture will continue to come at us to spend till we're silly. But I'm starting to see signs that people are resisting that. People are starting to think about their own financial well-being. And as we think about our own financial well-being, that will lead to better national financial well-being. We cannot have national financial well-being without personal financial well-being. And so it all starts with each of us and being where we are and changing whatever things that we need to change about us. That is the best and the most important and the first thing that we have to do. You want the nation to change the way it uses energy? You change the way you use energy first. You want the nation to change the way it consumes media or the world to change? It has to start with you first. If you want the nation to change the way that it consumes, you have to change the way you consume first. And in making the change personally, you stand the best chance of affecting the larger national body. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Is the number to call. We've got the phone lines open now. And they're all open. So whatever is on your mind, let us know. Robert Walzer of New York Times reports on his column, Green Ink, Energy, the Environment, and the Bottom Line. This is an article, a new report on state renewable energy regulations gives California, Colorado, New Jersey, and Oregon top marks and failing grades for Georgia, Idaho, and Texas. You hear that, Texans? Freeing the Grid, which was written by renewables advocates. Okay, so that's who's written it. Renewables advocates have written Freeing the Grid. Examines each state's policies on net metering and interconnection procedures. I know your eyes are rolling. What am I talking about? Well, if ultimately the electrical system of the future that we want to have is one where if I have solar panels on my house or wind turbine on my house and I'm generating energy, and I can then theoretically put that energy onto the larger electrical grid, And I can send that energy along the grid to somewhere else where power may be needed. If the state of Texas does not interconnect with other states, then the energy that I could generate in Texas cannot get to those other states. And in fact, Texas has one of the most closed electrical systems, probably the most closed electrical system in the United States. It's an island unto itself. I know Texans like to pride themselves, or we like to pride ourselves, on our independence. But that's no place for us to be independent. Just like our information system connects to the rest of the world, i.e. the internet, our electrical system should connect as well. And this report gives us failing grades in terms of our net metering and interconnection procedures. Those two things, net metering and interconnection procedures, are two of the main regulatory elements that enable homeowners and businesses to connect solar panels or other energy technologies to the electric grid and be reimbursed for their efforts. You could actually get paid for the energy that your home creates from the solar panels on it. The report states that if not fairly or properly implemented, these policies can pose a barrier to the development of customer-sited renewable energy. Two nonprofit groups released this report, Network for New Energy Choices and Vote Solar Initiative. Okay, so they've got their self-interest. We know that. But these are things that are critical to our future. Will we have electrical systems that interconnect in the same way that we have cell phones, in the same way that we have internet routers that interconnect, or will we not? James Rose, the report's primary author, in a telephone interview said there is a patchwork of policies across the country. The ultimate goal would be to have a federal standard, but we also would not want states that could go beyond that to be restricted. The report cites several pitfalls in current policy, including restricting eligibility to certain classes of electric customers, such as residential, commercial, or municipal, and limiting the size of eligible systems, not paying for extra electricity produced by customers, and charging discriminatory or unclear fees. Much, much to do in this area that has been ignored by a lot of us for so long. As I've said on the New Capital Show for years, energy and electricity really, really is such a massive, major question for our future. I took a trip to Portland, Oregon. It took fuel. It took oil to get me there. I got there. I rented a car. It took fuel. It took oil to get me to Mount Hood and back. Then it took more to get me back on a plane back to Houston and then back from the airport. How will we live in a future where oil might be more constrained or more expensive? And so ultimately, I think what's on a lot of people's minds these days are jobs. Jobs, which the lack of them is afflicting so many people in our country right now. People who either have skills and aren't able to use them, people who would like to get skills and can't get them. A job fundamentally is a way that a person is able to appreciate and realize their own self-worth and self-value. For so many, a job, for most of us, a job is a critical way, a critical prism through which we see ourselves. Are we doing work that is important to us? And if it is, then it's probably going to be important to others as well. And the terrible thing about this recession is the enormous loss of jobs that has occurred. And so, inextricably intertwined with the notion of perfecting our union and perfecting our nation is the idea of allowing each person to perfect themselves through work that they love to do. or that they enjoy doing. Those jobs are out there. I've said that for years. They may not exist yet. The capital may not have been put behind an effort to generate them, but they are there. I truly believe that. They are there, and they are inextricably intertwined with perfecting the nation. There are many people who want to stand against creation of those jobs, or who disagree with the creation or the way in which those jobs would be created, or who would create them, government or private industry. Would it be this way or that way? Would it be financed through debt or through equity or through savings or through taxes? But those jobs are there. Huge, vast quantities of jobs, because there's a huge amount of work to do to fix so many things that have been broken since that first Thanksgiving. From the environment to antiquated interconnect grids on the electrical system to the way that we generate electricity itself through the power plants, which are not clean and need emission scrubbers on them. Huge, huge amounts of projects to do in this nation. There is no shortage of manpower, person power, woman power. There's a shortage of jobs right now because we did such a poor job, really, in my lifetime, and I bear responsibility too, such a poor job of planning for the future. It's not enough to just hope for the future. We have to employ reason. And reason tells me that we have jobs to be created. Good ones. Nation-changing jobs. And we have them in large quantities. 713-526-5738. This is the New Capital Show. We're going to take a quick break to learn about what the weather's going to do from Tony. Tony, take it away.
There is a storm watch in effect from Friday morning through Friday evening. And tonight, it is cold, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, with a 20% chance of rain after midnight. Lows in the upper 30s. North winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And now back to Leo Gold and the New Capital Show.
Thanks, Tony. Man, that's just the best weather report in the world. I love that. Let's get to the phones. First up is going to be Frank. Frank, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're right. We are held back by this group think. You know, we need to start upholding individual thought, because that's what moves the society in furtherment for the future. And we don't really, you know, in school, when I was coming up through school, you know, I was made to feel like I was dumb and stupid, but when you identify with a person's strength and teach them in that, you then move society further in that direction where they can fit into the peg of the universe for good. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what you're having is a suppression of technology, and it's been happening for hundreds of years. And that's what the New World Order is. And we will defeat this thing, because it's coming out every day with the hoax that it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, man, I mean, we're definitely waking up, and this is a wonderful time to be alive, because we're all on the same team.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for the call. News on the school front. For Forest Kindergarten, this was a very big article in the New York Times passed around. For Forest Kindergarteners, class is back to nature, rain or shine. First of all, the word kindergarten means children's garden. So to call it a forest kindergarten is, I mean, a forest is a garden. It's a tree garden. out of Saratoga Springs, New York. Fat, cold droplets splashed from the sky as the students struggled into their uniforms. Rain pants, boots, mittens, and hats. Once buttoned and bundled, they scattered toward favorite spaces. A crabapple tree made for climbing. A cluster of bushes forming a secret nook under a willow tree. A sandbox growing muddier by the minute. They planted garlic bulbs and discovered a worm. The rain continued to fall. It was 8:30 a.m. on a recent Wednesday, and the Waldorf School's Forest Kindergarten was officially in session. Schools around the country have been planting gardens and planning ever more elaborate field trips in hopes of reconnecting children with nature. The Forest Kindergarten at the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs is one of a handful in the United States that are taking that concept to another level. Its 23 pupils, aged 3.5 to 6, spend 3 hours each day outside regardless of the weather. This is in a place where winter is marked by snowdrifts and temperatures that regularly dip below freezing. The New Forest Kindergarten, which opened here in September, is an extreme version of the outdoor learning taught at more than 100 Waldorf schools, all but a handful of them private, scattered throughout the U.S. They are based on the teachings of the Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner and emphasize the arts and the natural world, with no formal academic curriculum until first grade. Kim Lytle, whose 3-year-old, aptly named Forrest, is the youngest in the class. She says, "I love the idea of her being outside every day. If you have the proper gear, I think it's a really healthy thing to experience the elements and brave the world, and not just on a sunny day." The children's classroom is 325 acres of state parkland known as the Hemlock Trail and a long, empty farmhouse, which the state has licensed Waldorf to use for the year. Anyway, you get the point. I love it. And we have terrific people associated with our radio station here at KPFT who are doing similar types of things. You may know about Kath Conlon and her Blackwoods organization and location west of the city, which doesn't have a full-time school, but it has regular camp sessions during different seasons. If we want to change the nation, you know, let's start at home. And let's start with what we teach our children. And we should be teaching them about the beauty and the wonder of nature. They will then preserve it. They will be interested in defeating anything which harms nature. If you want your children to stand for the right type of energy generation and the right type of waste disposal when they become adults, teach them when they're children what gets destroyed when care is not taken with those processes and procedures. Put them in nature kindergarten, and you will change the future. For sure. Next up is Suzanne on line 2. Suzanne, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I've been listening to your talk about a couple different things. You know, the last was the Waldorf School. That's one thing. But what I don't get is, why are you applying all of your information to just, like, the 0.5% of the United States of America who's listening to you? You know, nothing's going to change if you're talking to the same old heads that are listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? My daughter went to Waldorf School in Hawaii, and I believe in everything you're talking about, but what's not ever going to change is nothing if you don't get out of this little circle of group that you're focusing on. Okay? What do you think?
Are you saying I don't touch enough people?
Yeah, big time. You know, unless you're Apple or that kind of mainstream, I mean, don't you people know somebody who's in the mainstream? Because if you're just talking to me, it's, you know, you've heard the term preaching to the choir. Well, you know, I already get it. I got it. And I'm tired of listening to it. But, you know, if we could take that out into an area where, you know, nobody like us is listening to, you know, dealing with a whole different realm of folk, then you might make a dent in the whole situation. But if you're talking to the same old heads that are listening to you, nothing is going to change, because we all know that you know, how many people listen to your station except the same old 1,000 people who listen to it?
Why do you think it's...
How many people buy Apple telephone or buy, you know, the iPod and Nano and all that kind of stuff? That's where this message needs to get. And as long as it stays in this tiny little pocket of, you know, bin of nature, nobody's ever going to really get it.
Suzanne, New Capital Show is available on the Apple iPhone. In fact, people podcast the show on the Apple iPhone.
That's fine. But what I'm saying is, when are you going to get on mainstream, like the Today Show or... You know,
oh, you want me to go on the Today Show?
What?
Do you know what? Somebody there? You want me to go on the Today Show? I don't know. I've not been invited.
Yeah, or Oprah. You know, does Oprah speak? Is Oprah like Jesus? You know, if you want this message to really get somewhere with it.
Oprah seems to. But Oprah has a
what?
Pretty. Oprah. I mean, I don't know if you agree with her or not, but
she's giant. Okay.
Yeah,
when Oprah speaks, she's like Jesus speaking.
Uh huh.
And if you don't get that, then you know you don't get it.
No. I don't know if she's like Jesus speaking, but she certainly has a big megaphone.
Well,
probably
I think
one of the biggest.
Sure is. I mean, yeah. Please.
Suzanne, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You know, I understand Suzanne's frustration. I really, really do. Believe me, I do. But. We at KPFT do what we do, and we invite the world to listen every day and all day. We can't make the world listen. I can't force anybody to listen because that's against our principles. For 40 years, we have been coming on the radio here and running the transmitter, and if you think people don't listen, I don't think that's right. We have a committed group of listeners. We have financial support that comes directly from them. We do what we do. But we are by no means the only people doing things in the world. I just told you that a utility in North Carolina is going to shut down 11 of its coal-fired power plants. Do you think for a moment they would be doing that if we had not done what we had done? Here at KPFT. You think our word doesn't get spread? You think 11 coal-fired plants in North Carolina are shutting down just for the hell of it? You think a climate treaty is at least even being discussed just because for the hell of it? We all do what we do. You know, you want me to go on the Today Show? I haven't been invited to go on the Today Show. Maybe someday I will. I haven't, you know. If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. No sweat off my back. I do what I do. And we all have to do what we do. That's life. What you do is the most important thing. It's more important than how many people I'm talking to or how many people are listening right now to the radio station. What you do is the most important thing there is. You get up every day, you do this, that's one thing. You get up another day and do that, that's another thing. That's just how it is. So we all have to choose carefully. I go on the radio every Thursday. I do it from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. You know? The rest of the time, I run a business, I try to do the best I can, I try to raise my kids the best I can, and when I leave this earth, I hope that I will have had a positive impact on it. I'm sure I'll have had some negative impacts too. But overall, I hope to leave it better. We can't make KPFT as big as Fox News right now, today, but we can get there. Next up is Camden on line one. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great.
I guess I just wanted to kind of echo what you were just saying. I mean, I think it's more, people need to take more of a personal responsibility because this is a resource. KPFT is a resource that we have. We're blessed to have. And, you know, you may agree with what somebody's saying, and I, you know, you may view, oh, yeah, man, these Waldorf schools are awesome. This is what this is what everybody needs to be doing. But people will think that and then, you know, just carry on their life the same way as it ever was every day as soon as the show goes off. And they never really think about it then because, well, it's too difficult to change the way I'm doing things. It's too difficult to pull my kid out of school and enroll him in this school. And, you know, it's really easy to think that, you know, yeah, this is the right idea, this is the right idea. But it's very hard to live that life. It's very hard, even if you just wanted to change your diet, if you wanted to start eating stuff that doesn't come from a major corporation that processes thousands of cows at once and has created a new form of E. coli from their practices, if you just want to eat healthier meat, it becomes very difficult just by price. You want to eat healthier produce. But these are things that we have to do. We have to bite the bullet and really just be in it for the long haul. It may be something that doesn't pay off in your lifetime. But if your kids see this example and they see how the rest of the world works and they decide that they want to be the same way, then that's the start. You know, everybody's looking for an immediate payback to these kind of changes, these hard social changes, and it's just not realistic. You do things and you start the crusade, if you will, because of what it'll mean to people in the future. That's what being a human is really about, is trying to cultivate the world that we live in and make it better for the people that are coming behind.
Camden, I can't add anything to what you've said. You've said it.
Well, here's the other point that I wanted to make, actually going back to the Waldorf School specifically, why I personally agree with them so much. You know, when we talk about our history as human beings, we really seldom go beyond, you know, Egypt, really, or these very definite cultures that everybody knows about, learns about in school. But what you never really hear about is about the time on this planet when human beings were mostly shamanistic in different ways. You know, they had specific beliefs, but all their beliefs were very much centered around respect and understanding for nature and learning how to work with nature in our living, instead of trying to make nature change to suit our needs. And as a result, we've seen over the past 100 years the most rapid change in our environment, which is the Earth. I mean, we can't really even think about it as our respective countries, because now we have the internet, people can communicate across the globe. We are now a global community, whether we like it or not.
Camden, thanks for the call. Great to have you on. Nothing really I can add. I think he said a lot, and I don't want to take away from it by opening my mouth. let's take next call. Will be Halcyon. Halcyon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, this was a surprise. I checked in to get my weekly hit of Leo Gold's take on economics, and he's reading from the New York Times on Forest Kindergarten.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Well, but it is. It is. I mean, it is an economic issue. How children are formed early in life really, in many ways, determines what the complexion of economics will look like in the future.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's inescapable. And if we raise another generation of rampant consumers, then you know, the economic effects of it will be writ large. And if we raise a generation of children who love and appreciate nature, it's what's important and motivates them and causes them to care. Our economics will follow from that.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you some good news, too.
Please.
And your other mm-hmm. caller hopefully will be interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group in Houston now that's forming called the Houston Children and Nature Coalition. And it's comprised of people like myself, who are designers, landscape architects, parks and rec professionals. We hope to get some parents on it. Developers. So we're seeing that developers and owners, homeowners associations recognize that parents are wanting to have their children have some access to maybe some little parks as they're younger and more challenging as they get older. And the first event is going to be January 23rd. It's part of the Houston Environmental Summit. It's going to be at the University of Houston downtown. I don't know the separate website for that, so I think by accessing the Houston ISD website, they can get information on it.
Okay, Halcyon, give everyone the name of your group again so that they've got it and maybe some way to get a hold of you.
Sure. We have a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Houston Children and Nature Coalition. So Yeah, and we'd love to have some parents on the group. It's just started forming, so this is getting in on the ground floor. Finally, Houston is coming on board with this. It's kind of been a nationwide movement. And I think Richard Liu's book, The Last Child in the Woods, sparked it.
Yep, but huge.
A lot of us have been working in Houston. I work as a nature-based playscape designer and have been working with children's programs, child care centers, not so much Waldorf because they're already doing it, but there's lots of child care centers where children spend so many hours that it's been my particular mission to see them have exposure to plants and landscaping, butterfly gardens, whatever we can bring. And the collaborative, there's an agency, the Collaborative for Children, that's also getting involved. The Yao Ming Foundation is funding three or four of those nature-based programs. So it's starting to happen.
Halcyon, thanks so much for the great news.
You're welcome.
So, Suzanne, there's the answer. It's your answer is coming from the listeners today, not from me. It's really easy for me to sit and talk about big issues on the show and big concepts and economic ideas and political ideas, but it happens, and it's most edifying for me to hear it happen that way. People standing up, moving forward, and doing something. And that's how it happens. Let's take Michael on line two. We've only got a few minutes left. Michael and then Teresa. Michael, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello, a fiduciary. Leo Gold?
Yes.
Yes, my comment was earlier to the lady that had called in about you preaching to the choir. Continue to preach into the choir. And as you know, some choirs and some churches have some very large choirs. We'll keep expanding on this choir that we call KPFT and Pacifica.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Okay. Next up is Teresa. Teresa,
Leo.
How are you?
Fine, very worthy subject. I was reading an article yesterday by Froma Harrop in the Chronicle, Kids Choosing Electronics Over Great Outdoors.
Yeah.
Says our children would be healthier if they turned off the video games and spent more time frolicking on the playground. So this is a topic that is just really relevant. More than one person's talking about it. I do want to address Suzanne's concern. I feel that KPFT, and especially you, are informing and educating listeners, helping us focus on issues and therefore empowering the listeners. And I hope that Suzanne will try not to be so panicked, can maybe get engaged in some groups where she can feel like she's making a difference. And maybe read Robert McChesney's book, Rich Media, Poor Democracy, because we just really have to support the media that helps us get focused and empowers the listeners to maybe make the change that she's so concerned about.
Yes.
Okay.
Teresa, great to have you on the show, as always.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I feel a very privileged to live in the times that I do. With the scientific knowledge that we've accumulated, enormous amounts of knowledge capital. I mean, we know how to do things, and we know the effect that we have when we do certain things beyond any time in history. Extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary thing to have that type of knowledge capital in our possession. And if you personally don't have it, you know, it's there. Maybe on Google, or maybe in books. Or it may be in the person who's right next to you. You know, Tony's running the board right now. I don't have a clue how to run the board. They've tried to show me. I promise you. They've tried to show me the buttons and the knobs and stuff. And I'm a failure. Kirsten's running the phone system today. I don't have a clue. They tried to show me how to do that too. I promise you. A long time ago, they tried to show me that you call this and you push that. It's not there. So we rely upon the leadership of others and the assistance and the help of others who have capital that we may lack. But it's incumbent upon us to put our own capital into the pool as well. We can't withhold our capital and then expect things to change or to get better. Each of us has capital that we have to contribute. and we have to get it to the right project in the right way. The same way that we have to get financial capital into the right projects. You don't want to send troops abroad anymore in the United States? I don't either. Let's leave aside the moral issues. I see no return from those projects. World War II happened and we sent huge armadas of men, and they were men, into war. And we perceived that that was a successful project. So much so that we decided that we were going to engage and duplicate that project for the decades subsequent to it. And we've done that, expecting the same returns that came from that effort in the Second World War. And we see now that that's not the case. You can't just say we're going to send the army, we'll get returns. Returns in our future are going to come from other projects. And the president talks about the fact that they're going to be projects here at home, and I think that's exactly right. We got time for one more call. Let's take Courtney to finish off the day. Courtney, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment regarding both Sharon and Teresa's comment.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to agree with Sharon, and I happen to somewhat disagree with Teresa, but I do agree with other people saying, you know, that these topics are coming out. To some extent, though, KPFT and its listeners is a little bit of preaching to the choir. I'm a member of the hip-hop generation, and I don't hear any of these topics discussed on mainstream radio like The Box or other stations of that nature. And I feel like Teresa was elitist and condescending in her comments towards Sharon. I think we have to remember that everybody has the right to their opinion.
Courtney, thanks for the call. I didn't hear that tone from Teresa. I really, I know Teresa, and I don't think she would have ever intended that type of tone, and I didn't perceive it. I think she was really trying to be more helpful than anything and say, let me show you how you might become involved and how you might get satisfaction from becoming involved. And I think that was that's what I heard. You may have heard something different. I respect that, but I hope you respect that I heard it differently. It was a good conversation today about these very important issues. Our radio station, what the function of it is. Are we doing as much as we can? No. We can always do more. We try to do more. But we do what we do, and I think we do a pretty good job of it. And we want as many people to listen as possibly will listen. But that's not always in our control. That wraps it up for another edition of the New Capital Show. I will be back with you 1 week from today. You can find the New Capital Show on Facebook under Leo Gold. You can find me under Leo Gold. NewCapitalShow.com, www.newcapitalshow.com is our website address. You can also send me email there. I'll be happy to respond to anything that you send me. We will also put our podcast up. We podcast on iTunes as well. So if you carry an iPhone or something like that, you can subscribe to our podcast, and the show will download automatically. I want to thank Tony for running the board so professionally for today's show. And as always, Kirsten for helping with the phones, bringing in the music, and helping me figure out what it is that I'm going to do over the air. Next up is Free Speech Radio News. I hope you will stay tuned. We've got a great news lineup beginning at 4 o'clock. 4:30 p.m. is the local KPFT News, which they do a fantastic job, Ron Reynolds and crew. And then at 5 p.m. is Democracy Now!, Pacifica's national news show. Until next week, take care.
My name's Chris, and I've been using drugs for many years. I've been in and out of jail. I lost the trust of my friends, my family years ago. I was desperate, lonely, and totally hopeless until I found the opportunity of my lifetime, the CenterCor program in Deer Park, Texas. The CenterCor treatment program helps men and women end the cycle of substance use once and for all. CenterCor is not a quick fix, but if you're serious about changing your life, CenterCor works. If you or someone you know is ready to build a new life, Senecor is here to help. Call 1-866-923-3428 and a Senecor representative will tell you how to get started. That's 1-866-923-3428. Senecor can put you on the right track to getting your life back, and they won't ask if you have insurance. I have a new life now. If you want to save yours, give Senecor a call.